Now, a man who's been on the show a few times, Dr. Malcolm Kendrick, Scottish doctor, author, speaker, and skeptic, the author of a couple of brilliant books called Doctoring Data and The Great Cholesterol Con. And he's joining us now to talk about our current COVID situation. Morning, Malcolm. Nice to talk to you again.
Good morning, good morning.
And this stems from your blog that you do at drmalcolmkendrick.org. And you did a thing which was called COVID Update, Focus on Vitamin D. And I'm guessing that you, like everybody else, are finding it very hard to keep track of what's going on with COVID.
Oh, well, I mean, you can't. It's impossible. They did say, I read a statistic somewhere that if you read one clinical paper a day, by the end of the year, you'd be 55,000 years behind in your reading.
Yeah.
So at the moment, I think you'd be about 5 million years behind in your reading. It's just like a storm of information. So keeping track of it is impossible. Yeah.
You deal obviously with the general public. What's their kind of fears and concerns been that they've been brought to your table?
Well, primarily, I've been working with the elderly population at the moment. I've got two jobs, essentially. I work in what we call out of hours, which I'm not entirely sure if they have in Spain, but it's when the GP surgery shut, the patients come along at weekends and in the evenings and stuff.
I see.
We've been seeing an awful lot less of these patients. The workload has fallen through the floor, essentially.
Right. Interesting. Now, there are all kinds of snake oil salesmen, for want of a better expression, who are kind of announcing these wonderful products that would not only cure COVID, but every other disease known to man, aren't there at the moment?
Well, that's always the case. And I'm afraid a situation like this brings more and more of them out of the woodwork, because there's a lot of people desperate for something, anything. So you have to be very careful, I think. Absolutely, definitely.
But your piece is about something very specific, which you describe as potentially your miracle cure for COVID, which is vitamin D.
Yes, well, unfortunately, I can't make any money out of it. But
Now, of course, vitamins in general. In fact, we had your friend of mine, Zoe Harcum, on not that long ago, talking about vitamins. Wonderful things, but the medical profession seems to hate vitamins with a passion for some reason. Why is that?
I'm not entirely sure. I think there's a problem that a lot of vitamin stuff gets wrapped up with people who are involved in what conventional medicine consider woo-woo medicine, with all sorts of other aspects. And it just seems to have become an area where, right, we've worked out what vitamins you need. You don't need that much. That's the recommended daily allowance. Once you've got that, everything's fine. Off you go. Goodbye. And anyone who suggests that anything different is basically just attacked as being an idiot who understands nothing. It's slightly weird, because clearly they're called vitamins for a reason, because the vit stands for vital.
Yeah.
And without them, you die. So I think that there is a kind of battleground. And unfortunately, I think some of my colleagues would almost rather that the entire population of the world succumb to COVID rather than they admit, well, maybe a vitamin might be useful.
Interesting.
So it's a weird thing. I'm not entirely sure why the medical profession in general is so absolutely just has a great antipathy towards vitamins so strong. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
And we're kind of led to believe, because we know it's not true, that everybody is supposed to have sufficient vitamin intake from the food that they eat, and anything else you just pee out, basically.
Well, I mean, there's one thing's for sure that there's one or two vitamins that you can take far too much, but I mean, you're talking sort of ridiculous amounts, essentially. Mm. I was speaking to a Swedish doctor, he's not a medical doctor, he's a professor, who is currently taking 15 grams of vitamin C a day, which I couldn't manage, because if I get above 2 grams, I start making rumbling noises.
Yes.
So I think at the moment I am taking increased vitamin C, because there's also evidence that vitamin C is beneficial and helps your body to fight off infections quite powerfully as well. I haven't really gone into that, but I think that lack of vitamin C is also something we should be looking at. But I focus more on vitamin D because it's the evidence appears to be so clear that it's beneficial, both in preventing you from getting infections, and then when you've got an infection, helping your immune system to sort of attack it as powerfully as possible. So all I can say is what I see.
Yeah.
I may of course be wrong in this, but I mean as you may be aware in the UK that what they call the black Asian minority ethnic groups called BAME for short.
Yeah.
Especially amongst doctors, I think it's now almost 70% of the medical profession who died of COVID have been from the BAME minority groups.
Interesting.
And we know that these groups are lacking in vitamin D more often, not all the time. In part, well, that makes perfect sense. I mean, when humanity moved from the equator further north and further south, our skin became pale in order that we could synthesize sufficient vitamin D. That was evolution in action. And so therefore dark-skinned people living in the Northern Hemisphere are really much more likely, and they are, and it's measurable, and we know this, to become vitamin D deficient. And there's also very strong evidence. I was looking at a paper where they gave people vitamin D supplementation during the whole year. Off the top of my head, it was 800 units for 1 year and 2,500 units in the second year. And during the second year, amongst 160 people in this trial, only one of the participants suffered from a flu or influenza or cold-like illness, whereas on the other groups, there was like 30 or 40. So we're talking pretty major evidence that it's beneficial.
Absolutely.
I'm always a great believer in first do no harm. It's almost impossible to cause yourself harm by taking vitamin D3 or going out in the sunshine and exposing your skin to the sunshine, because that's where vitamin D is synthesized in our skin.
Yep.
So sun exposure is incredibly important. And it was also interesting to note that when they looked at, it's just slightly surprising, the lowest vitamin D levels in the elderly population in Europe were found in Italy and Spain.
Really?
And Switzerland. And these are the places that suffered, if you like, the first hit.
And of course, ironically, Malcolm, with the lockdown having been so severe here in Spain and in Italy, people aren't out and about getting their dose of vitamin D they would have got anyway. So they're getting even less vitamin D now.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, ironically, in the UK, since lockdown occurred here, we've had the sunniest spell of weather I can even remember.
Yes.
I have been getting sun on my skin. I've got a bit of a tan. Today I look up at the sky and I can see two small fluffy clouds. That's it.
Wow.
So, definitely you cannot overdose from sunshine, but if you go out in the sun and expose your body for about an hour, to the sun, you'd be getting in more than you'd need for like a week or two of vitamin D.
Interesting.
So we can produce it pretty quickly. It's really not a vitamin, actually. Vitamin D3 is actually a hormone, which, of course, ironically, given our previous discussion, is made from cholesterol. that's the base compound for vitamin D, is cholesterol, which is why cholesterol levels drop during the summer and go up in the winter. Because we're synthesizing vitamin D from it.
Interesting. There's another bit of science that you talk about, which is very interesting indeed in your article. And these are the effects of vitamin D on protecting what are called endothelial cells. Can you go into that for us?
Endothelial cells, they're the cells that line all of your blood vessels.
Right.
The total surface area is about the size of a football pitch. If anyone could ever lay them all out flat, which I don't imagine is ever going to happen, but these cells are extremely important because obviously they're the interface between your bloodstream and the rest of your body.
Yep.
They also exist in your lungs because the endothelial cells, the cuticle epithelial cells, line your lungs on the atmospheric side and the blood side. And they're incredibly important at controlling what comes in and what comes out. Equally, if you damage endothelial cells, this means that obviously you're more likely to create blood clots because the body thinks a bit of damage, exposure of the underlying tissue will create blood clots. So one of the very important things we found with COVID is clear is that people are developing what they call micro clots, which are blocking up their lungs. And micro clots, this is called, the technical term is disseminated intravascular coagulation, which basically means lots and lots of tiny little blood clots that effectively block up your organs and your lungs, and that's what's killing most people in the end, or killing a lot of people in the end. And they're seeing these blood clots in the lungs. So anything that can stop that happening, this is the same thing that happens with sepsis, you know, bacterial sepsis that kills people. And that's why people lose their arms and their legs, because their blood supply gets so badly damaged that they end up with losing fingers and noses and things. So on a slightly smaller scale, this is likely what's happening. So it's very important to protect your endothelial cells, and they are protected. Because the other thing that also protects your endothelial cells is a substance called nitric oxide, which I've talked about in many other places, which is hugely important. And sunshine on the skin stimulates the production of nitric oxide, which is probably the most potent endothelial cell-protecting substance produced in the body. It's incredibly important at preventing blood clots, etc. So there's a double benefit here, really, of the sun. It's not just vitamin D, it's also nitric oxide. So by sort of keeping people indoors, by telling people not to go out, by avoiding the sun, which is another reason why, in general terms, the COVID epidemic has affected the Northern Hemisphere countries far more proportionately than the Southern Hemisphere.
New Zealand,
New Zealand's got a population of 5 million, which is obviously about an eighth or ninth of that of Spain. But the total number of deaths in New Zealand, last time I looked, was 20. And South Africa, which has got a population about the same as the UK, a bit higher than Spain, had a total when I last looked of 160 deaths total to our population. So it does seem to be and this is another reason why influenza affects people during the winter months, because the vitamin D and the nitric oxide and everything sort of drops down. This is a theory, not completely accepted. Which is why viral infections hit countries when they hit the winter time.
Yes.
And go away when they hit the spring and the summer. So, I mean, I've laid a small bet with a colleague that the coronavirus will effectively disappear in about a month. It will just be gone, like all flu epidemics. I'm hoping to be proved right.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I've been mentioning for a while that the numbers in for example, Vietnam and Thailand, even though they've done the same social distancing, the numbers are dramatically lower there. Zero, actually, in Vietnam the last time I looked.
No, I know, I know. You do look at these things and you think, well, why aren't people looking at this sort of for an explanation? Well, obviously, if you're a country close to the equator, you don't really have spring and summer in the same sort of a way.
Yes.
And you're kind of permanently, I mean, Vietnam in spring isn't like our summer, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't want to sound as if it's all to do with one single thing, because it never is. But there's no doubt from looking at the evidence in my mind that very strongly that we need to be looking at sun exposure, vitamin D, nitric oxide, these things. And I'm just recommending this to people. I recommend it to people on the basis that, well, if I'm wrong, what's the worst thing that can happen?
Yep.
Nothing. You know, if I'm right, what's the best thing that can happen? We can reduce the mortality rate of this disease by, you know, factors, if you like.
And Malcolm, for those who are listening now, I mean, our rules here are very weird about where and when and what time you can go out, depending on age and the moon phase and all the rest of it. For those who can't get natural sunlight potentially for the hour that they need, for whatever reason that might be, are supplements as good? And if they are, how are they best taken?
Well, supplements seem to be almost as good. I don't think they're quite as good, but they are almost as good. And they're certainly better than nothing.
Yeah.
The best form of vitamin D to stay the most active is called vitamin D3. Vitamin D goes through a series of reactions in the body when it's first produced. It doesn't do anything, and it has to be chemically altered to D2 and D3. And D3 seems to be the one that's most beneficial.
Right.
I have been taking 10,000 units a day. It comes in international units of micrograms, and I can never remember the conversion. I don't know why it comes in units rather than milligrams. But that's another question for another day. That may be more than you need, but I think if you build up your supplies, then you can reach the kind of required level. Because the number of people who are vitamin D deficient is in at this time of year, or maybe slightly earlier in the year, it's quite extraordinarily high, and especially in elderly people. You don't seem to synthesize it as well, et cetera, et cetera. So, there are other questions. Why are elderly people so much more affected by this disease? Vitamin D is a potential answer to this. As a supplement, I take 10,000 units. I'm not taking them now because I'm going out of the sun. And I take 2 grams of vitamin C a day. I've been exposed to 24 patients that I've dealt with have died of this disease.
Right.
And I haven't got it yet. But, of course, that's relatively meaningless. But I have had members of staff who've then been found to be COVID positive coughing all over me in treatment rooms. And I advise everyone I meet to do the same things, which is vitamin C, vitamin D.
Very, very simple. It couldn't be simpler. And Malcolm, before I let you go, one of the books that you wrote, and we've had you on the show talking about it, was called Doctoring Data, How to Sort Out Medical Advice from Medical Nonsense. At the end of all this, you've got a second book coming, surely, about that, haven't you?
So I'm writing my final magnificent end of tome about heart disease and what really does cause it and how you can understand everything to do with it, which is kind of what I'm doing at the moment. Hopefully it'll be finished in about 3 or 4 months time. I haven't got a title for it, but it's coming.
Fantastic.
But well, yes, I think in the COVID there'll be many books need to be written about governmental stupidity would be the blithering idiots are in charge, I think.
Yeah.
Might call it.
Yeah, I think we've got a similar view here in Spain, that's for sure. If people want to find out more about the subject you talked about and all the other interesting stuff on your website, malcolmkendrick.org or drmalcolmkendrick.org, is it?
drmalcolmkendrick.org.uk.
Fantastic. As always, a pleasure to talk to you, Malcolm. Keep up the good work, as they say, and we'll definitely have you back on when your next book's out. Really nice to talk to you, Malcolm. Right. Good advice, as always.
Thanks, Will.
All the best. Bye-bye. Cheers.